from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Today we're talking about Trinidad's Espiritu Series No. 2, crafted with tobaccos from Brazil and Nicaragua and wrapped in an Arapiraca leaf. Espiritu No. 2 produces a harmonious medium to full-bodied cigar with extraordinary zesty complexity and earthy notes. Come by the shop and pick up your Trinidad Espiritu No. 2 today, 2143 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
It's a bright new day. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and there's never been a better day to try Mount Shasta spring water. Hi, I'm Bob the Drop. I come from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta. I'm bottled at the source. It doesn't get more cool and refreshing than that, and it's delivered right to your door. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally, the best. Start your bright new day by calling 1-800-922-6227 to order some of the best tasting water on the planet. Mount Shasta spring water.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
As restrictions continue to be lifted in Shasta County, many businesses are set to reopen, and KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and KCNR1460.com wants to help spread the word. So, if you are reopening your business, planning on opening a business for the first time, or are already open for business, KCNR has many advertising packages to choose from. Give us a call at 530-605-4565 and talk to a KCNR representative today. That's 530-605-4565.
Reading Electric Utility cares about the whole community, and we offer an income-qualified residential energy discount program that can save you up to $400 a year on your energy bill. And once per year, CARES bill credit up to $300. To find out if your income qualifies you for a residential discount program and CARES program, call 339-7200. That number again is 339-7200.
Since 1890, Stifel has established itself as one of the nation's leading wealth management and investment banking firms by understanding clients' hopes and dreams, focusing on building and preserving wealth. Simply put, when you achieve your goals, we achieve ours. I'm proud to be a part of Stifel as a financial advisor. This is Susan Eastman, First Vice President Investments. Call today for quality time well spent. 530-244-7199. Again, 530-244-7199.
KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at am1460.com. Don't miss Free Fire Radio weekday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bott. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. From noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, Don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal to riding roots, pop culture, and unsung heroes in the North State. From 7 to 10, tune into Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. KCNR also has an incredible weekend lineup, including The Flatline, Jefferson State of Mind, Sovereign Minds, and We the People on KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world: family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. For this month, we're reviewing Arturo Fuentes Hemingway Classic. With curves of a supermodel, this Perfecto has a superbly balanced, toothy, and attenuated Cameroon wrapper, and pairs exquisitely with a complex filler and binder that indulges the palate with citrus, coffee, cocoa, and cedar. Come down to the shop for your Arturo Fuente Hemingway Classic today, 2143 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Look, staying healthy isn't easy. Watching your diet, hitting the gym, avoiding stress. But a good night's rest helps boost your overall health and wellness. And it couldn't be easier. The new Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed is the only bed that effortlessly adjusts in response to both of you. The result? You wake up ready for anything. Proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. Don't miss our weekend special. Save up to $1,000 on the Sleep Number 360 i10 Smart Bed and adjustable base. Ends Monday. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Join us for Turtle Bay's Walk on the Wild Side Animal Show, running Tuesday to Sunday at 11 a.m. and noon. This fun-filled educational wildlife show gives you a special look at Turtle Bay's most beloved animals, including Spike the Porcupine, Cricket the Barn Owl, and more. The Walk on the Wild Side Animal Show is presented by Hempstead's Moving and Storage. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
Convert your calling into a career at Shasta College this fall. Get transfer ready for a CSU, UC, or a four-year university. Or boost your current career skills quickly and affordably with a certificate or degree from Shasta College. Our fall semester will offer more in-person classes on campus and more in-person student services. We'll continue to offer many of our classes via our flexible online environment for added convenience and choice. Right now is the perfect time to invest in your future. A degree or a certificate from a community college will pay dividends throughout your lifetime with an average annual wage of almost $53,000. And at Shasta College, our industry partners are actively looking to hire qualified candidates from our programs to fill many of the positions they have open. Financial aid through grants and scholarships can help you invest in your education without a huge bill when you graduate. Contact a counselor and plan your tomorrow today. Fall semester classes begin August 16th. Achieve more. Earn more. Shasta College. www.shastacollege.edu. Enroll today at Shasta College.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is a second-generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993 and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
Yet the deepest truths are best read between the lines and, for the most part, refuse to be written. Amos Bronson Alcott.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses. And today we're talking about one of my favorite things in the writer's toolbox.
Our topic is subtext. It's those things between the lines, the things that are implied. The things that we've talked about in the past when we tell you about world building and backstory, that is subtext. Subtext adds depth to your characters, to your settings, to your world, to your dialogue, to everything about writing. Which is why when we talk about making your outline or developing your world, developing your characters, that you know so much more about all the characters that you aren't putting in the book, so that your knowledge can be written in subtext. It's those things that you can imply by looking and showing he sees a dog and his muscles tighten and moves to the other side of the street. His breath quickens. So you can imply, yes, he is afraid of dogs and there is a story there without having to explain the story in a page and a half of useless backstory.
I would say this is a good litmus test for a skilled writer. Is there subtext in the moment? We spoke about this during our Diagnosis Writer series over the summer when we focused on dialogue. A lot of what we said was take stuff out of the quotation marks, because then you're moving it to subtext, and it becomes a more interesting read.
How do you write something without writing it?
One of the ways you can do it is your character probably has a tell. Every time he lies, he runs his fingers through his hair. And then one of the characters can point it out to another one, hey, you ran your fingers through your hair, I bet you're lying. That happens at the beginning of your story. The reader is informed of this particular detail. Now, throughout the rest of the story, every time he runs his fingers through his hair, we know he's lying. Then there's this element of depth to the story, because it's not only what the truth is of the moment, but what he wants the other characters to believe the truth of the moment is. One of my favorite examples of establishing subtext is from the more modern version of Italian Job. There's this saying between several of the characters that the word fine stands for freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. Oh, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine. I'm pretending to be okay, but I'm really freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. There's an elegance and an artistry to how they use such a common word in that story because they defined it to have a bunch of subtext attached to it.
So here's the danger of subtext. Say you establish something like that, and then you have a time later that they are using "I'm fine" literally. Suddenly things are lost in translation to the reader because they're thinking that it's attached to all the subtext when really you just kind of thoughtlessly threw in "I'm fine."
Your editor will point this out to you saying, "Is this what you intended?" Because you could have intended, he's freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. But if you didn't, and you didn't do anything with it, the editor is going to go, hey, this needs to be a different word.
Another use for subtext is to get your readers thinking about the book when they're not reading. This is one of the reasons I love Brandon Sanderson's books. There is so much subtext. Enough subtext that I can reread the book multiple times and still learn something new every time that I had missed before. And when I'm not actively reading, I'm thinking about those little details, those little elements about the stories, the characters, the nuances that just fill the books. That is probably why they're so long.
This bit of detail is especially useful at the end of a chapter, because that's what will get people thinking about it while they're driving, when they should be paying attention in school, when they're in the shower. These things, when their mind wanders, if it's wandering to you, goody. That's part of the goal. You want them engaged in your story and thinking about it when they aren't actively reading the book. Subtext is also really good for getting your reader to be thinking in two ways at once. If you're familiar with film, that's called a split screen, where two different things are happening at the same time. Having that subtext established will help your readers understand a lot more of the moment in a lot less acreage on the page, a lot less time spent. We understand what one character is interpreting is different than what another character is interpreting because we know he's lying.
There are a couple of times, especially in writing, where subtext is very important. One of the first ones is when characters are lying. You rarely want to just come out and say, it was a lie. So you want to have those tells, those little nuances that show that without having to say it.
Unless, of course, you have that character who just goes, I don't believe you. They'll just call him out on it. But that is a character choice, and the reader should understand why the character is saying that, because the reader understands the subtext of the situation. Another type of story where you need to have a lot of subtext is, of course, the mystery, because everyone is looking at all of the other characters and going, did this person commit the murder, or did this person steal the jewels, or whatever. Every single character is being addressed with a little bit of subtext because the reader is trying to figure it out.
You also want to have enough subtext in your mysteries so that your readers feel satisfied at the end of the book. Especially with murder mysteries, where it's a whodunit, you want the reader to be able to pick up on little subtleties here, little subtleties there, that lead them to, by the end of the book, having a pretty good guess about who the bad guy is. And that is all done in subtext.
Another great use of subtext comes with introverts.
They're not going to be blatant about their emotions. So you need the subtleties of subtext when you have a character who is an introvert, speaking as an introvert.
Subtext is the path you take as an author to make sure it's believable for your readers.
You also want subtext when you have characters that are falling in love. This one is difficult for me because when it comes to relationships and emotions, I'm pretty straightforward. So writing a subtle falling in love over time romance is not easy. But this can help your readers feel emotionally connected. They can feel like they're falling in love at the same time without being beaten over the head with it.
One of my favorite moments in the Jack Reacher series is when Reacher has been friends with and commanding over this woman who is incredibly strong, incredibly powerful. She hates being touched. There's one moment when they're in a life and death situation. They know one of them is probably going to die tomorrow unless everything happens perfectly, which of course it does. In a time when he would have slept with anyone else, he didn't. He respected her and he didn't touch her, but she reached out and put her hand on his for like 4 seconds and then walked away and went into her room. But that was the first time after like 20 years of being friends, the first time they had physical contact. And there was so much subtext in the emotions of that moment that I just loved it so much.
Subtext is also fun. When you need something to sound ominous or to carry a second meaning, like the example from the Italian Job of I'm fine.
If I have a character who is bleeding out and the mother figure is holding him in her arms and she goes, everything's going to be okay. You know, as a reader, everything is not going to be okay.
Another word that carries a lot of subtext is goodbye.
If you watch a fair amount of TV, pay attention to when they end a phone call with goodbye. That feeling, that sinking in your gut, that's intentional by the writers. Of course, when a character is lying for the sake of someone's emotional status, oh, I'm just kidding.
They're not. They said it for a reason. They're not actually kidding. There's a bit of truth behind every just kidding.
Oh, I don't care.
Yeah, they do.
They wouldn't bring it up if they didn't.
Yeah. Or, I don't know, how many times have you met a kid where you ask them what happened and they go, I don't know.
There is plenty of subtext in all of these phrases to throw in, but use them intentionally because your reader will infer something that you might not have meant to imply.
If you have more questions about the use and what subtext is, look up actors talking about subtext. They have to deal with this a lot because screenplay writers write the text and then the actors have to act the subtext. And as the writer, you are kind of both. You need to write the text, imply the subtext in a way that your readers can latch onto it and live it like an actor would.
So if something feels wrong in the story that you're writing, try implying as much of it as you can with subtext and then bringing it back to literal, because that will give you a much richer story. Instead of him saying, I don't want to go fight the dragon, he can hesitate in putting his armor on and he can go, well, we could always fight the dragon tomorrow. You can start implying all of these things with subtext if you're feeling that your story is falling a little flat.
A lot of the time you just want to make it smaller. Go down onto a smaller level, which we will be talking about in a week.
But until then,
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
People constantly make pop culture references. That's why it's called popular culture, because people are aware of it and reference it constantly. Seth Rogen.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Our question of the day is,
can I use names of copywritten material in my book? Quotes and songs, that kind of thing.
Yes and no.
Do not let your entire book be citing word for word Twilight. That's not going to fly.
That is copyright infringement. There are some things that you can do. We're going to talk today about the specifics. Break down what you can and can't do according to the law. Now, we are not lawyers. We are not copyright experts. If you have a question, if you're concerned about it, your best bet is to go to legal sources, not some random person on the internet who says that they know a lot about it.
So, one of the questions you have to ask yourself is, do you plan on making any money with the writing? If it's fan fiction or something like that, you are not going to be allowed to make money with the writing. You can write all you want, but it's when money gets entered into the equation that these questions even come up. If you don't plan on selling your book ever, then just, you know, have fun.
Skip this episode, move on, it doesn't apply to you.
Right, selfishly.
First off, if it was written 95 years ago, so as of recording right now, if it was published before 1925, you're good to go. It's in the public domain.
What is public domain?
Public domain means that it was created so long ago that it now belongs to the public in general.
This is not to say that it's uncopywritten, because in a way it is, because you cannot take the Bible word for word and publish it and copyright it and then say no one else can write it. It is in public domain, meaning it's more or less the copyright is held by everybody. So if you're writing a fan fiction of the Canterbury Tales, where they finish the travels, go for it, have fun, but you aren't allowed to make money off of Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling's world that she's built, because that's hers, she owns the copyright, she's the one you need permission from, and probably need to pay a lot of money to, in order to create new content in that world.
Now, there is something to help you in this, and it's called fair use. Fair use allows the use of trademarks and certain copyrighted material under very specific circumstances. There's a couple of things that you need to consider before you can classify what you're using as fair use. I got this list from Standout Books. They're a publishing services company. And they list four things that you need to consider before you can consider your use of that copyright or trademark material under fair use. The very first is if you are using it in a commercial for-profit situation, or if it is educational and or valuable in some way to humankind as a whole. Valuable to you is not valuable as a whole.
That goes back to what we started the episode with. Are you making money on it? Because that needs to come into consideration.
You also need to consider the nature of the copyrighted work and what it is that you're referencing. You cannot take, like we said, the entire script of Twilight and publish it yourself. Because that goes into the next part, is the amount of text that you're referencing. A little bit here and a little bit there is fine. Entire chunks, not so much.
Yeah, I can't copyright the word the. That's too small of an amount to limit the rest of the world from using that particular tool in their storytelling.
And the final thing is you have to consider what the effect will be on the original copyrighted work in its potential market value, which is why you can't just republish something that somebody's already written, because that directly affects their potential in the market.
So if I have a character who's 11 years old and he has a lightning scar and he discovers he's a wizard, there's going to be some issues there. if I have a character who's 11 years old and he's riding a bicycle and he flips over the top of the bicycle and he goes face first into the gravel and he ends up with a lightning scar on his head and one of the friends goes, you look like Harry Potter. And that's the end of it. That is not impacting J.K. Rowling at all because your characters are just making a pop culture reference.
So let's break down some more of the rules in fair use and go specifically into what can and can't be used. As I mentioned briefly, many of the rules depend on how much content you include. Having a single name, like Wonder Woman, doesn't really matter. If I include a scene from the new Wonder Woman movie, word for word, verbatim, there's going to be problems.
If you're writing a nonfiction, citing sources can get a little messy. Having that bibliography at the end should help, but
there is a fine line between citing a source and straight-up plagiarism. You can cite a source, summarize, include a quote, make sure it's short, and you're fine. If you copy an entire page, if you copy even an entire paragraph, it starts to get sketchy.
A lot of that comes down to, are you claiming it as your own? If you are giving credit where credit is due, you can argue a reasonable effort. Again, consult your lawyer if this is where you are.
Especially if you are writing a nonfiction that is meant to be educational, you have a lot more freedoms under the fair use ability. Let's move on to songs.
Don't.
You can't just list the lyrics of a song. I don't care how important you think it is to your story. If it is a copyrighted song, you can't just list the lyrics and have it be part of your script. You can reference the song or the artist and say, that person is listening to this. For an example, John Green in the book Paper Towns had, they were shouting along to a song by the Mountain Goats. So they have this reference in there to a real band that made a real song, and that's okay, because it's a reference that directs the reader to that, and it doesn't take away somebody's ability to enjoy that song by the Mountain Goats.
Okay. We said never under any circumstances. If you have way too much money lying around, one, make sure you visit our Patreon page, and two, you can go to the artist and say, hey, do I have permission to use these particular lyrics and I'll pay you this much money? There are an enormous amount of other issues that come with that that I am not qualified to inform you on. It is physically possible, but...
yes, it's a lot easier to do small references. Now, we mentioned briefly earlier fan fictions. Fan fictions are a huge, huge source for how people get started writing.
I believe it was Neil Gaiman started with a Lovecraft-Sherlock Holmes fan fiction mashup thing.
Now, if you take a look at a book like Ready Player One, is that classified as a fan fiction? There's references and everything everywhere in there.
Not technically a fan fiction. They are really close to a lot of those lines, but the characters and the world are themselves.
Yes. And that is a very good example of this fair use idea, where you can use pop culture references everywhere. Just like our quote at the beginning from Seth Rogen, pop culture references exist because people reference them everywhere. So it's totally plausible to have these references in your book without having to get permission from the author. You can't use their material exactly, but you can say she was in her Wonder Woman pajamas.
So, I've seen Blue Harvest, and I've seen Spaceballs. These are parodies, they're satires. Am I allowed to do that in my own writing?
Of course. According to the same website that I listed earlier, Standout Books, they say... quote, parody is only a legal defense if your parody is sufficiently transformative. So it has to be different enough. If you aren't changing the original base for your satire and parody enough, then you could be in serious trouble.
So what about people that actually exist? Can I say my main love interest looks like a beat up Orlando Bloom?
Yes. The danger here is, yes, you can use names of real people, but you have to be careful of how you use them, because you can open yourself up to libel and defamation lawsuits if you are throwing these names under the bus. If they are a real person and you're accusing them of bad things, that's a really big problem.
Which is especially scary, not just for celebrities, but if you're writing an autobiography. You're much better off in not just referencing people, but everything, to make up a name that's similar and go with that.
And all you have to do in that case is at the beginning say some names, some circumstances have been changed to protect the privacy of those involved. So to kind of sum up what we've talked about in this episode, I know it's a lot of legalese that we just kind of threw at you. Yes, you can reference things. You can reference people, you can reference books, you can reference pop culture in general. That is perfectly okay. You cannot use entire characters, you can't use entire passages, you can't defame anything of a copyrighted work in your book if you're using it for profit.
But in the end, I just enjoy writing. I enjoy telling the story, I enjoy setting up the plot and putting my characters through terrible things. Because in the first draft, what I always do and what you should really do is just
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
The best investment is in the tools of one's own trade. Benjamin Franklin.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hall.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Today's question is, what kind of software is best to use to write a book? And what about formatting that book?
My pastor has this saying. People would ask him all the time, what's the best version of the Bible? And his answer is always, the one you'll read. To answer this question, I would say the same thing. The one you'll actually write the book in.
The one you'll use. Every piece of software has its benefits, its negatives. You need to find the one that works for you.
We're approaching this question because we see it all the time. This episode, we are just talking about the different options that are out there, our experiences with them, so that you can know where to start in your own research.
So we're talking about software programs that help from the beginning to the end of the publishing process. Let's start with writing the book, the best software pieces to write the book. There are many, but the simplest ones are, of course, Microsoft Word, Google Docs, LibreOffice.
And my personal favorite, pen and paper.
Typewriter for funsies.
The non-writing world will automatically think Microsoft Word. That's what I do my typing in. That's when I am writing my essays for school in. That's going to be the default that a lot of people go to.
One problem with Microsoft Word, there is a cost. I personally don't like it because of that.
That's also why I use LibreOffice. It's a useful tool for people who are not wanting to be online constantly while they're writing, if you don't have great Wi-Fi or whatever where you are, but you want to get a bunch of text just on a page.
LibreOffice Google Docs, Microsoft Words. They're all simple writing tools. I think Microsoft Word and Google Docs have basic spell check and grammar check designed into them. My biggest problem, though, aside from cost, is that you have to manually save. I prefer Google Docs personally because it auto-saves everything I do, and I won't lose my work.
A lot of people are asking about voice-to-text as well. If you're on a computer, the Dragon speech recognition software is one of the more popular ones.
Phones are a great resource for this. I know someone who has problems with their hands, so she writes almost solely through voice recognition on her phone to Google Docs.
There's one more name in this category that you're going to see fairly often, and that's Scrivener.
It's a little, I think, more advanced than your basic word processing. There's a few other different word processors like Scrivener, such as LivingWriter and a few others. These can be useful for someone who wants a little more advanced help, but it does come at a cost. If you know how to write, if you're comfortable with that, and you have resources to get a good editor, then getting an advanced word processing software isn't absolutely necessary. Scrivener is also good for people who want to do other kinds of writing than just novel or fiction writing. I have not personally used it because I have ways to do them that are free.
Last thing I want to mention in this category is a program called Celtix. C-E-L-T-X is specifically for screenwriting and stage writing. That might be one you check out.
So let's get into the next step. Once you've written the book, your next step is to edit the book. Whether you are editing on your own or with someone else, there are different resources that can help you in this process. My preference is Google Docs.
Google Docs is nice because you can both be involved in the project at the same time. And instead of seeing that little red line and then making the changes to reflect that, you can either accept or decline the suggestion.
So it is very useful. Now, if you don't trust your editor as much as we trust each other, then
find a different editor.
Or use Cami. Cami is a kind of plugin that allows you to do a lot of the same things with Google Docs of making comments and notes and suggestions on a PDF.
If you're looking that up, that's spelled K-A-M-I. Another suggestion I see a lot of people offer is Grammarly.
Grammarly is an active software that checks and suggests grammar, spelling, stuff like that. Like any grammar software, it is not 100% correct.
It's going to have a little bit more advanced suggestion tools than you're going to see in Google Docs or Microsoft Word, some of these other places. Of course, one of the classic tools in your editor's toolbox is going to be Microsoft Word with track changes. So you can turn on and off the track changes and see how it could read according to your editor's preferences.
Another resource, this is going to be more useful for books that need to be designed, so nonfiction books, is InCopy. It's a little bit more artistic and a little bit closer to the formatting end of the editing process than the editing process itself. And that's by Adobe. Look into it, research it before you invest in it, because it is not free.
The next software category that we want to look at is if you are designing your own cover.
If you're designing your cover and you don't have a lot of graphic design background, Canva can be a good resource. It's free. They have templates that have good designs to them already. However, if you use a template, you are not going to get a unique book cover by using a template. Look to them for inspiration and then create your own. Canva has elements that you can use all for free.
Speaking of free, the program that I use is called GIMP, which is basically Photoshop, but the baby version. Photoshop is obviously the preferred tool because it's now become a verb as well. But GIMP is the baby version of Photoshop and therefore free. And it does 90% of everything exactly how I want it to do it.
I prefer Photoshop. You have a lot of flexibility, a lot of resources. However, if you do not already have a copy of Photoshop, you have to pay for it. Along with Photoshop, you can also use Illustrator and InDesign. Both of these are good for creating graphics. Illustrator is used for vector creation, vector designs. So if you are creating something that looks like V.E. Schwab's A Darker Shade of Magic cover, that is all vector design. You can do that in Illustrator. Don't do that if you don't know graphic design.
So in order to find a picture for my book cover, I can just Google it, right?
No.
There are a couple of libraries you can go to and search for the type of image that you need. Google is not one of them.
There are websites that you can go to, Wikimedia Creative Commons. There's also Pexels, P-E-X-E-L-S, or Pixabay. Use all of these with incredible caution. While most of them are copyright free, sometimes ones that are copyrighted can be snuck in there by somebody who stole the copyright.
As we mentioned earlier, Canva has these pre-designed templates, which include your cover art in the collection.
But they also have a whole source of free-to-use pictures.
So after you have your cover, after you've written your book, after you've edited your book, it does need to be formatted before it goes out into the world. You can't just sell a Microsoft Word document. There are a couple of different programs that will do it to EPUB, which is going to be the most common way to do it, a digital ebook. The one that I've used a fair amount is called Calibre, C-A-L-I-B-R-E. It's unwieldy, but it's free.
The one that I found and used and actually really liked for my book was a program called Vellum. This is costly, but it is a one-time buy of the program, and it does the formatting automatically. You make certain settings, say that you want the certain size of book, and it'll spit out the formatting for you. And it's very intuitive. So before I tried Vellum, I tried Readsy. This one is free, it's online, it does the formatting automatically, but it took all of the double paragraph spaces that I had in my format for a scene break. It removed those. Readsy is just beginning. It is a new service that they offer, so they're still developing it and fixing things.
Definitely one to keep an eye on for the future.
And it functions a lot like Vellum does.
Of course, if you have Microsoft Word and you've used that for your first few because you have the whole office, then an easy one to lean on would be Microsoft Publisher, which I've mostly seen in newspaper editing. It's got some very interesting formatting for nonfiction styles of writing, if that's more what you're going for.
That, along with the Adobe InDesign, are very useful if you have a lot of images in your book. However, you have to do every page individually. This takes a lot of work, it is a lot of effort, but you get the most flexibility out of these two programs.
One thing that you're going to see a fair amount of that I really don't like is the PDF. It's easy, basically every program will export to it, basically everyone has a way to read a PDF. But they look amateur and it can be a bit of a mess. So who do I go to for printers?
If you are self-publishing, the biggest resource out there is Amazon. You submit your book, you can buy personal copies at printing cost, basically.
If you're looking to do a hardcover for something, Lulu offers printing in hardcover.
Barnes & Noble also has more kinds of formats than Amazon allows. Amazon is basically just paperback, and your options are glossy or matte for the cover.
The other option that I see a fair amount of is BookBaby, which looks like it's doing a lot of the same formatting. I haven't used them myself,
Another one that's becoming popular for printing the book and distributing is Ingram Spark. They, I believe, are connected with the Ingram distributor, so it's a little bit easier to get into physical bookstores through using them, and they do the printing services. Don't take me on my word for that. I am still in the process of researching them. Whatever you choose, though, it needs to be right for you. The reason why there are so many options is because people are different. Find the one that works for you, for your needs, for your writing. Because what matters is that you have the freedom to
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Tobacco and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. Tobacco and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
The cost of a thing is the amount of what I will call life, which is required to be exchanged for it, immediately or in the long run. Henry David Thoreau.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Before we get into our question of the day, I want to remind you guys that we are on Patreon if you guys want to support us. Help us out. Let us keep creating these episodes. Go there for as little as $10 a month, which is basically a dollar an episode. You can help keep this podcast going.
Speaking of money, what is our question for today?
How do you set the price for a book?
I'm going to write a book saying how to make $1 million, and then I'm going to price my book at $1 million so that if I sell one, I'll have made $1 million.
Not a good plan. Mostly because the people with $1 million are not likely going to be looking to make $1 million.
Or maybe they'll buy 2 books so they can have $2 million.
Still not working.
So, obviously we're just teasing here, but it is a legitimate question that a lot of especially first-time self-published authors will ask. How do I set the price for my book? I obviously don't want to set it so low that nobody thinks it's worth anything, but I don't want to set it for $1 million and leave it out of reach.
The price of a book varies by a lot of different factors. It's the kind of book that it is, whether it's physical or ebook, hardback or paperback, audiobook. All these have different ways of pricing your book, but it also depends on the trust that the reader has in the author and the value that the reader puts in that book, not the author. Because in this case, the customer's mindset matters the most. It doesn't matter how much you want to sell your book for. If the customer sees that as too much, they won't buy it. So in the exaggerated example of selling a book for $1 million titled How to Make $1 Million, you're not hitting your target audience. One, I don't think anyone's going to pay $1 million for a book.
Maybe if it was like Da Vinci's manuscripts or something.
Yeah, some sort of ancient artifact that is priceless. and never to actually be read. So it depends on your audience and what they want.
Under that category.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.